We have eyes on the field.
Hey, bada, 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 so we bada.
Eyes at home.
Good moving, you stupid.
Yikes. It's the Field and Stream podcast with Trevor Huth and Tyler Jennings.
Welcome back to another episode of Field and Stream. You're probably wondering why it's Tyler making this intro instead of Trevor. Trevor is kind of having a little bit of some off-the-field stuff going on right now of work, so I told him just take a mental health day, and I'll take care of the show for him today. So, of course, I'm not just going to do this solo. I have a pleasant guest to have to do this podcast with, Jared Perkins of Royals Farm and Prospects Live, as well as Major University. Jared, how are you doing tonight?
Good. Ready to talk some baseball. Nice little Monday night, so ready to get going.
Absolutely. Of course, we kind of just want to start off with the live looks like we do every single week. Obviously, we don't have the stream part of the Field and Stream here tonight with Trevor, but Jared has gotten his own live looks in the past couple of weeks. So I kind of want to start off with you, Jared. What have you seen recently, and kind of give us your thoughts on everything?
Yeah, the most recent was took one out to George Mason and took a look at Tyler Locklear, who comes in at number 93, I think, on the MLB top 400 for Prospects Live for the draft this coming year. He didn't have his best game in that one, but went about, I think, 2-for-6 with 3 RBIs in that one. But you could see why he's being highly touted in the draft. Definitely a bat first prospect, played third base a little bit. About average there, defensively, fringe average at third base. Will most likely be a first baseman slash DH when he gets to the professional baseball. But yeah, it was fun to go out there and watch.
Heck yeah. And then, of course, you saw Maryland a couple weeks ago, too, because obviously Maryland's not too far from you. Can you give us a little deep dive on, like, Nick Dean, the couple of other guys you have on that Maryland roster you've seen?
Yeah, Maryland is interesting. I mean, those guys rake. That whole entire lineup from top to bottom basically just hits. They were playing Siena College, so, of course, the pitching wasn't the best coming out of there. I think Chris Alien was hitting leadoff, their center fielder, and just all-around athleticism from that guy. Some power, some speed, has a little bit of a higher strikeout rate, but he's just kind of the guy. When you look at him, he's just kind of not a 5-tool guy, but he's just got good tools across the board. I think he might be a grad senior, but he's just a guy that could potentially be an undrafted sign or a late round pick that someone might take a flyer on. Nick Dean looked pretty good. The velocity was down in that game. I think he gave up like 4 or 5 earned runs in that game, but just because he was down to 86, 88, I think, but for most of it was touching 90. I think I talked to Joe a little bit, and he's just been dealing with some shoulder issues or something like that, and that's why he was going into that game. But overall, the command's his forte, so he was he really works the strike zone. He relies on that. So if his command's not there, then he was getting lit like he was the other day. A lot of pitches were left middle, and Siena College was taking advantage of that.
Gotcha. Then, of course, I'll kind of go into my little thing here. I'm just going to keep it short and simple, mainly because UNC, Virginia Tech didn't really have too many guys. It was mainly like Virginia Tech, and I'll dive further in with like UNC guys later on in the year once I get done seeing all of them. But like Virginia Tech, you got the three main guys that I saw personally was like Gavin Cross, who could be a first rounder this year. You had Cade Hunter, who's been one of the biggest risers in this draft class. I think we had him like 96 on our top 400 update that we did. And then the 23 in Jack Hurley, who I think is very interesting. He was the cleanup guy. And it's like last year I went up to Virginia Tech for a Boston College series and saw him, and I thought, this guy might be a guy to watch for 2023. He's a freshman, top of the lineup, good hit, good bat the ball, has some decent power. This year is a completely different story because he's really cut down on the strikeouts. He had like 64 last year. I think at this point he's under 20 or at least somewhere around that range. He's hitting like 450 on the year as well, probably batting close to 500 in ACC play. I really like the stuff. I think he could be a pretty good corner outfielder. I don't know if he'd be right or left field because I didn't really see much defensively. But I mean, he had multiple exit velocities over 100 miles an hour. He's got some good pop, good speed. I like to bat the ball as well. I think he could be a guy to watch for next year, and it could be the first time or I could be wrong here, but I think Virginia Tech might have another first rounder next year. And it'd be the first time they have back-to-back first rounders in either a long time or they've never even had one. Gavin Cross, of course, always good. Still the same kind of like chase and like swing decisions as last year, but he's cut down on the strikeouts, which is good. I like the bat. The power is going to play to all fields. He had two on Friday night. One was off the scoreboard in left field as an opposite field bomb, and then pulled one, just like flicked it out there in the second at bat. I like him. I like the speed there as well. I think he's a pretty legitimate center field prospect. Good defense out there, good reads. Could potentially move to a corner, like right field spot with the arm that plays there. So he's a guy to watch. And then, of course, Cade Hunter, one of the biggest, like, batted ball datas that we've seen this year. Liked stuff behind the plate. I think he's a good defender. I don't know if he stays there long term, but I do like the bat. It's got quite a bit of juice in it. But obviously, I think the one thing you got to watch for Cade Hunter is probably like breaking ball, see how he adjusts to that later on in the year. That's one thing I kind of noticed. But overall, Virginia Tech's lineup just slaps. Like,
yeah,
it's amazing to think that like Cade Hunter is sixth in that lineup, and even the guys underneath him are hitting like 380, and like the entire lineup doesn't have a guy under like 275. God, it's ridiculous to think about.
Yeah, I'm excited because I'm going out to see Virginia Tech play Virginia in May, and it's Virginia just rakes too. So watching those two teams go against each other, and Virginia's got some good potential draft prospects in Savino and Neck on the mound. So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that Virginia Tech lineup.
Oh, that's going to be fun. That's a really, really good lineup for that late in the year too.
Yeah.
So kind of just want to turn our top or, you know, change the topic here to kind of like the major league stuff, because obviously opening day is going to be on Thursday when we release this. For the record, we're recording this on April 4th, Monday night. Kind of just want to start off with like the guys who made the roster. You know, Bobby Witt Jr., who, you know, you work with Royals Farm. They're very much in on Bobby Witt. Kind of just like explain your thoughts on that.
He's just a guy that's got every tool across the board that you want. I mean, power, speed, average. And defensively, he's really good too. He's going to slot in at third base because of Mondesi at short. I think Matheny talked about the other day that he said future he sees Bobby Witt Jr. potentially moving to shortstop, which means maybe Mondesi moves to second depending on how things work out in the future. But he's just, I mean, unreal. What he's been doing this spring too, he doesn't even look overmatched by the pitching that's throwing against him. And he's the guy that he could easily go down as one of the three greatest players to ever play in this organization. And that's huge to say now and early on, but the potential's there. And it's exciting Royals fans are excited everywhere. And he's been slotting in at the two hole a lot in the spring training. So there's a good chance that he's going to bat second in the lineup.
Absolutely love that. Because, I mean, what was it? Bobby Witt was, like, what, second overall in 2019, remember correctly, just after Adley. So, I mean, that kind of talent in that farm system, too. I think that farm itself is pretty stacked as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's that AAA lineup is going to be insane. It's Prado, Melendez, Pasquantino, Clay Dungan, who gets kind of overlooked, and Brewer Hicklin, too, who had a little bit of a down year. But that guy's got an amazing power-speed blend combo, too. So that AAA team is going to mash.
God, I wish they would come to Durham.
Yeah.
I don't think they do, because I know I want to say last year, AAA, they kind of just stuck to their own division. And this year, it kind of like back to normal, but I can't remember if Omaha actually comes out here or if they go out there or not. It'd be nice if they would.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be a fun series to watch.
Absolutely. And I think even with like what Durham has here, I want to say Jacksonville comes up pretty quickly. I think Max Meyer is starting in AAA, so I get to see him pretty early on. There's a couple other guys. I think Grayson Rodriguez is going to be here at some point. So it's going to be a pretty fun summer as long as you know they're not caught up before then. A couple other guys we kind of want to talk about too. Julio Rodriguez finally got the call to Seattle, which is amazing to see because we've been kind of like talking about it in different chats recently. It's like we want to see J-Rod in the lineup, and he did pretty good this spring. I kind of like that. Sad not to see O'Neill Cruz make the Pirates opening day roster. I thought he would, but it kind of, you know, is what it is. I'm sure he'll be up in like a couple weeks. So that Pirates team has got something to prove. Couple other guys, Torkelson also made the opening day roster. I think he's going to be the first baseman with Miguel Cabrera, or is he going to be DH or something like that?
So I saw that article that Miguel Cabrera gave Spencer Torkelson his first baseman, kind of like a passing of the torch, which was kind of cool to see. So it sounds like Torkelson's going to play most of the season at first base, and Miguel Cabrera will shift over to DH. But yeah, he's that power is insane. I mean, the things I saw some of the video when he was playing at Arizona State, and the balls that he just hit out of that stadium were just nuts.
Yeah, and I think there was like they posted a GIF or a GIF, whatever, however you want to pronounce it. I get it confused sometimes, but it was like they posted one of those little videos of him opus high swing bomb like 2 days ago or something like that. I don't think I've stopped watching that since.
Yeah,
personally,
it's nuts. He's going to be good. I mean, I think there's some questions around like strikeouts and things like that, but he does well enough in terms of strikeouts that the average is going to be there, and he's got a good enough hit tool where that power is going to play. I mean, there's no concerns, I don't think, comparative to like a guy like, I don't know, you think about like Jorge Soler or things like that, where there's some hit tool concerns. Like Torkelson doesn't have that, but anywhere near that.
Oh, yeah, no. And then I think at some point, too, I wouldn't be shocked to see if, like, maybe they try him at third base, because I know he tried out there at some point in the minor leagues. Personally, I think he's just a first baseman, but it'd be interesting to see how he does at third base, see how that goes. Kind of like, I think Miggy was third base for a long time before he moved to first base. So
did he play at shortstop at one time with the Marlins, too? Like, when he first came up, he was coming up as a shortstop. I can't imagine him trying to.
Oh, imagine him now at shortstop. That'd be interesting show to watch.
Yeah.
I think Riley Green was also another guy that could have made that team, but obviously he's injured. He's going to be out for like 6 to 8 weeks. So hate to say it. I'd like to see him come up at some point, but I just don't think it's going to happen for a little bit. JP Sears, a guy from the Yankees, is an interesting one. He's a low 90s guy. We'll kind of talk about him a little later on. He made the roster. There was a guy that was involved in, I do believe it was the Chris Bassett trade. I think Adam Oler was on the opening day roster, which is cool to see. Stephen Kwan made the roster from what I can tell. It's an insane like bundle of talent that they have here. English Tyler. that it's like, it's a very, very good crop of talent here at the top of the minors here. Even I think Yon Duran even made the opening day roster, the Twins.
Yeah. And there's talks about CJ Abrams potentially could crack the roster now with Tatis out. And that, I mean, that guy's dynamic speed, power. I mean, great hit tool. That guy's going to be fun to watch if he makes the team. I would love to see Ha-Sung Kim get some playing time, but if Abrams is going to make his way and push and force his way onto that lineup, it'd be fun.
Oh, I love Abrams. Like, I kind of bring this up because NHSI is this week. By the time this goes out, obviously NHSI will have started by this point. But last time we had that tournament, it was Abrams and Pete Crow Armstrong were actually in the same game for the semifinal. I remember watching that game and thinking it's like, well, Abrams is going to be like a top five pick. Riley Green was also there as well. I remember that he almost killed me with a fly ball, which was amazing to even like try and dodge it because it was like 5 feet above my head. That game was awesome to see. And I remember watching Pete Crow Armstrong. He had a triple in that game. And it was just one of the speediest guys I think I've ever seen. And he ended up being a first rounder the year after. So kind of just wanted to bring that up. I with NHSI this week, that's just my main focus at this point. You know, it's like opening day is, you know, Thursday at this point. But it's like I get a full week with some of the top high school talent in the country. Like Dylan Lesko is going to be pitching. Maybe even Wednesday night if they even have the games, because we're supposed to have pretty bad storms. But, you know, you take what you can get at this point.
Yeah.
If it's like a tradition, and it's just how every single year you get some sort of bad storm.
Yeah. Yep.
As long as it's not tornadoes, then we'll be good. so, yeah, to kind of go through here, Matt Brash also made the rotation for the Mariners, which is exciting to see because he was called up late last year but never pitched.
Yeah,
And now he's going to be in that rotation. So
that stuff is, I mean, he seems to be more of like a two pitch pitcher with the fastball slider combo with an average kind of third pitch and his changeup. But it's, it's just so good, and he keeps hitters off balance with that combo. I think there's some there's been questions about the command, but he wasn't showing any of that during spring training. So it's kind of, I mean, he doesn't have the more polished repertoire that George Kirby has, but I still think he's got the talent to hit some of his ceiling.
Oh, absolutely. I think that the slider too is just completely disgusting.
Yeah.
Kirby too, I think he got sent down mainly because like the secondary needed refinement and everything. He can't really pitch just off the fastball, mm-hmm. which even with 80 grade command that he has, it probably isn't going to, you know, suffice at the major league level. So I'm sure at some point he'll be up this year because he's just fun as well. Hunter Green, we talk about like a fastball slider guy. He's going to be starting on Sunday against the Braves, I do believe. Me and Trevor talked about it in the past. I actually love this kind of call up because the Reds obviously aren't going to have much going for them this year with the way that they sell like the rebuild starting. I'm interested to see how Hunter Green does because that's you know, we talked about Matt Brash and the two pitch kind of repertoire that he has. Hunter Green's got like a potential 70 fastball, 70 slider with like a maybe like average changeup behind it too. That's fun.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be I do love, of course, after he got announced in the rotation, he kind of got lit in the next spring game and everybody had some little hesitations. But, I mean, it's spring training. They're still working on things during those games as well. But he's going to be interesting. And then the Reds also announced that Lodolo is going to be traveling with the team. So they're going to have Green and Lodolo kind of at the back end of that rotation.
Well, I didn't even realize Lodolo made it, too. That's fun.
Yeah, they didn't announce. I don't think they announced the fifth guy because they only had a 4-game series to start. But Lodolo is going to be traveling, it sounds like, with the team for the first series.
Yes. Reds fans got to be excited about that. Kind of just going through the list, too. I think Bryson Stote has a legitimate chance to make the Phillies roster there. Trying to see who else would be on there. Ethan Roberts with the Cubs. I saw him made the bullpen job, so that's awesome to see. Diego Castillo of the Pirates actually made the roster as well. He was like number 20 or 21 in that farm system for us at, somewhere. There was another guy too on the Reds, Raver San Martin. Don't really know too much about him, but it looks like had a pretty good late season last year, had a really strong spring, and now he's gonna be in the show, so that's awesome to see as well. Dodgers don't have anyone.
They got a whole all-star lineup.
Yeah, I was about to say, they're stacked as it is anyways. Joey Bart's a lock, which isn't shocking considering Buster Posey retired last year, but I like to see how Bart does. Interesting because I've talked about it before with Patrick Bailey being in that system too. Do you think that Joey Bart could potentially move to first base and Bailey be the future backstop there, or do you think it might be vice versa?
I think it might be a little bit vice versa. I know they Patrick Bailey seemed to get some high praise during camp this year, I think, from Gabe Kapler. So I think that he's got some potential. I know he's had some issues kind of in the development stages. But, I mean, I don't think it hurts as a Giants to have two guys who can potentially be back there full time. With Brandon Belt getting older and potentially on the verge of retirement at some point, like the fact that they can potentially switch both those guys between first and catcher, even and save their legs too, would be huge.
Especially considering catcher's age, you know, not like fine wine. They fall off a cliff at some point.
Yeah.
Those are really just some of the top guys that I've seen here that made the roster. We'll have more that come out as we get closer to opening day, obviously. Those are some of the big names that we've seen so far. And then now we're going to kind of dive into some of your stuff here because you work on a bunch of Midwest stuff on the side as well as like working with Prospects Live and everything like that. Kind of want to talk about like the housing accommodations we've seen recently because Cole Uvilla was a guy that posted something about how the most stressful part of spring training is finding accommodations. And now the Orioles have gone above and beyond to try and make that a lot easier for their guys. So kind of like dive in and see it, like how does that, you know, affect a certain player, or like how does it affect their like routine and everything like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's so Austin Beiler, who created Major League University, he was a Diamondbacks prospect at one point, and he said I think like 4 or 5 guys living in a 1-bedroom apartment in Missoula. So when he was playing for the Osprey at the time, and they were on air mattresses, they were going to the ballpark every day. And when you think about routines for baseball players, are like one of some of the key things that go into that are good night's sleep, getting a good food and nutrition to get ready into the games. And just having that lack of housing can cause so many different other difficulties. I mean, you can relate that to normal society where, and you think about like the social determinants of health, housing plays is such a huge issue, and just trying to be a functional human being on a daily basis, let alone being an elite athlete. So if you're trying to be an elite athlete with no housing accommodations, or you're living in a hotel sharing bedrooms and you're just kind of out of your element and out of sync, I mean, it makes it more difficult to get into those routines.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, I mean, I'm not obviously an athlete in any sort of imagination at this point. I'm 23 and a half. If I'm a baseball prospect, that'd probably be like a zero grade if there was a actual grade on that kind of stuff. But you know, it's like having that, that mindset was like, oh, I have somewhere like legitimately to, you know, go and sleep and get rested and everything like that and come back the next day and get back to the same thing I was doing, you know, the day before. That's big. Because that's just a big relief on your end, because now you don't have to worry about, you know, where am I going to sleep at the end of the night? Am I going to be on a bus? Am I going on someone's couch in the middle of nowhere? It's going to be, I have my own place now. And it's awesome that the organization has gone, you know, one step further to try and help me in my, you know, development and progress in order to get to the major league. So that's awesome to see. And then I wanted to kind of ask this too. This is kind of for like my own sake, kind of, but also kind of want to like help the viewers if they had the same sort of issue too. When I was a senior in high school, this is like five, six years ago at this point. I mean, I ran cross country and track. I was trying to get a scholarship, but I got injured, ran on the grade four stretch fracture for 3 months. Yeah, that was not the smartest idea in the world. I will say that. But I was out for like 2-3 months, came back, and I was just struggling to kind of get back into the groove of things. I know you've talked to like Tyson Ross was one example. Mm-hmm. I remember that article, and Ty Buttery, kind of like that effect of trying to get back into things, like with rehab and everything. How, like, is there any like tips that you have that could definitely help those athletes who are trying to, they're struggling to get back into the swing of things?
Yeah, I mean, so one of my good friends, Chris Gehring, he's a physical therapist for Switchback Physical Therapy, a company that he runs. I mean, he focuses on the mental side of the game, or the mental side of athletes in terms of injury recovery and kind of the role your mind plays in trying to come back from injury process. And a lot of the times, it's a whole mindset too. Like there are the physical parts of injury recovery. There's no denying that. That's a huge portion that plays into the injury recovery process, but your mind also plays a role. He said he'd have patients who had a bad, they'd come into the clinic, the traffic wasn't bad on the road, and when they came into the clinic, they were fine. The pain wasn't as bad that day. But then the day that they came and the traffic was bad, they were frustrated, they were angry, they came into the clinic and their pain was a 9 out of 10 versus the day before it was a 4 out of 5 out of 10. So it's like those outside external factors still play a role. Even in the physical injury recovery. So it's just trying to find ways to keep your mindset in the right way. I think Asa Lacy talked about it in the recent Royals Farm Report article that I wrote. And he said when he was coming back from injury, he said he just had to let go of the fact that, and didn't have to not have this feeling that every time he threw a pitch, he was going to get injured again. And he said he finally had that freedom and he could just go out there and just be himself and be the old Asa Lacy he was before he started feeling the pain and the injuries and things like that.
Yeah. And what was he injured with? I forget.
I think it was a shoulder injury. I don't know if they had the full report on exactly what it was. I think he just had some soreness. They shut him down for the rest of the season last year. Then he came back in the fall. He was throwing 100 miles an hour. So there he finally let go and got everything back. So.
Yeah. No, that was kind of my struggle too, where it was like, getting back into the swing of things, like I was running before I was injured, my fastest 5K was probably like a 19:30. And just trying to get back into it for track season, it was like I was struggling with like trying to get down to the 6 minute mile. Because I was just sitting here, it's like I want to go as fast as I can, but obviously my body wasn't 100%, and it still isn't. You know, I'm probably going to be in a wheelchair by 35 at this point, but yeah. You know, it's what it is. There's a reason why I play golf now instead of football and all that
leisure
stuff.
Leisure life.
Yeah, no, it's like That was my main struggle, obviously, was trying to get back into the swing of things. So I'm sitting here, it's like, I want to get back to that pace I had before. I'm sure baseball players obviously had the same issue where they struggle to get back to the same mindset they had before. It's like, I even still struggle now where it's like, you mentioned, like, don't want to get injured again. Like, I went out and run yesterday. I did like 3.5 miles, but I'm sitting here, it's like, my foot's falling asleep. I don't like that.
Yeah.
It's like, what if that's something underlying from like 5 years ago, or could that be like, you know, something else that happened? It's a very distraught feeling you kind of feel at that point. It's like, it sucks.
Yeah.
That's probably the easiest way to put it. It's just like, it sucks.
Yeah. It's never easy trying to kind of bounce back from all those things. And it's like, you constantly think, and I think one thing that Chris works on, he talks about mirror therapy, and he's like, you what you basically do is you put your limb that's active in front of the mirror, and you just kind of do mirror therapy, because a lot of times in your head you think you can't do something with your leg or your arm because it's hurt, even though you can, but just mentally in your head it's hard to get past that barrier.
That's definitely one thing I've learned too, because the more I've matured, I've kind of realized it's like, you know, I don't have to be going at like a 6-minute mile pace every single time I go out and run. It's kind of like, go at your own pace that you feel like you're comfortable with and you feel like you can get done, instead of trying to go all out and then all of a sudden, hey, you're hurt again. You know, it's the same thing for kind of every sport too. I can even say that with golf too, because I was like, you know, back would kill me. And I was like, I'm going to swing out of my shoes to see if I could try and reach the green from here. Never going to happen, because I'm either going to throw them back out, or I'm going to, you know, hit a 300-yard drive and it's like 250 of this in the trees to the right.
Yeah.
That was obviously the biggest struggle. And is there like any one certain case that sticks out to you that you've like written about or talked to a prospect about?
Yeah. I mean, I guess like the Ace of Lacy is the big one that comes to mind, just because it's most recent, and everybody kind of was down on him because his walk rate was so high, and he just didn't have strikeout numbers were there because the stuff is just nasty and it's filthy. But I don't think people realize the underlying injury and kind of the role that plays in terms of your mentality and trying to go out there every day and pitch and go out there every day and be successful. The fact that he's kind of in that mindset now, where he's like, okay, I'm over this injury. We're coming into a new season. It's going to give him a chance to go out there and just roll and just be himself and be back to that same pitcher that he used to be. So I think that's the huge thing there. It's like, you just see how the mindset plays such a significant role. And when we look at the numbers and we look at the statistics, you don't see that behind the walls, you know, and you don't see that the mental anguish and things like that go into the injury recovery process and trying to get yourself back out there. You look at a guy like Noah Murdock from the Royals as well. He was from the University of Virginia, but he's got some of the best stuff in the organization. He's just thrown like 40 innings in the last 3 years because of injuries. And so just imagine the impact that has on him and trying to come back from injuries as well. It's just, you just think every time you go out there that there's going to be another setback. And so like that kind of probably plays a role in too. The mental side.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, having no setbacks obviously is one of the biggest struggles, because now you've taken even a farther step back, and it's like, well, am I ever going to be able to get back to this point again? So that's a big thing too. With Ace of Lacy, is he starting high A this year, or is he?
I believe he's on the double A rotation, so it's going to be Alec Marsh, Ace of Lacy, Zach Hockey, Anthony Veneziano. Like, that rotation is going to be absolutely, like, double A hitters are going to have no shot.
Ooh, that's going to be a lot of fun. The Royals farm system is just fun to look at too.
Yeah.
So kind of just want to start wrapping things up here, because we don't want to go too long tonight. Obviously with Trevor out, we aren't going to do all the stuff he wants to do, because I know he does want to be here. He does want to do all this stuff. It's just, obviously, I'd rather have him focus on himself and just kind of get himself right and everything like that. So we're kind of going to start going to the end product here. And we know every single week we do like our little prospect that you want to know kind of deal. I'll let you go first here. Who's the prospect that you want to talk about here? Who's the guy that you think the Raiders should know about?
Yeah. So, of course, I'm going to stick with my Royals theme just because it's the organization I know the most. And I think one prospect that gets overlooked, even though he was a first rounder, is Nick Lofton. He's just a guy that has above average tools across the board, basically. Defense is kind of one of his biggest probably carrying tool. He's the big thing that I want to touch on too is that he's been moved to the outfield this year. He's kind of a utility guy, can play all over, second, shortstop, third base, but the Royals are lacking kind of a big center field prospect, so I believe he's going to start in double A this year in center field. He's just a guy that he's got a really good strikeout rate, really good walk rate, he controls the strike zone very well and is able to find his pitch and drive it, and so he's just a guy that he's going to get you double-digit home runs. He's going to get you double-digit stolen bases, and he's just going to be a great utility player across the board. And I think he's got a chance to make that next level and be a starting center fielder. One guy I forgot to touch on from the live looks that reminds me of him a little bit is Luke Gold from Boston College. He just has above-average tools across the board. He doesn't have that one carrying tool that's kind of like, you're like, oh, this is like this raw power or things like that. It's just good across the board, and I think that's what Nick Lofton is like. He's just got all these tools across the board, hit tool, speed, power, they're all just above average and they're good.
Heck yeah. And speaking of Luke Gold too, it's like, I, you know, when I mentioned I talked about that Boston College series I saw him at last year, if the wind wasn't blowing in like 20 miles an hour from left field, he probably cranked like 12 bombs. Like, the power is pretty good in that bat. Yeah. I like the hit tool. It's just, for me, the defense is kind of just like, where do you put him?
Yeah, he's been playing second base, but he's kind of more, he profiles more as a corner infielder probably. But at third base, I don't know if his arm's good enough to even play third. So he's just kind of, you're just like, where does he play? But he could make second or first work, I think.
Yeah, I think he probably ends up like right side of the infield. If not, he could be like a DH type bat where it's like the bat plays in the lab. You just don't know where it's going to be in the field. So it's like, play it safe with the DH, especially with universal DH coming out here.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, that's the nice thing about Lofton is he's really good defensively everywhere. So he's like, that's a big opposite between him and Luke Gold, is where Nick Lofton can kind of excel anywhere he plays defensively. I think center field's going to be a little bit new and he's going to adjust, but he's so athletic, he can probably figure it out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's like, do you think we could see Nick Lofton being like, you know, end of the year, he's going to play all nine positions at some point?
I don't know if he plays first base at his size. I don't know. I don't think I can see him going over to the first base. He's only, I think, 6'1", 180. I don't know if that's going to be a first baseman type.
It'd just be for one inning, though. So yeah. Like, you just throw him out there. It's like, all right, good luck.
Yeah, go get him.
To quote the good old Elian Avin from Sam Highfield in that the 13-player game, it's like, good luck, have fun. Now he gets three hits off Kumar Rocker. Yeah. So it's like, all right, I guess he's going to be playing first base next year. So I'll kind of touch on my guy too, because I already mentioned him earlier for making the big league roster with JP Sears. So I kind of want to dive deeper in it for like the Yankees fans who don't really know who he is. He's a Citadel kid. He's kind of a little bit older for a prospect. He's like 26, I do believe. He just turned 26, I think. But he was a 2017 MLB draft guy from the 11th round from the Mariners. He was in that Nick Rumblow trade from 2017. He saw a real uptake last year, which was good because he used to be like the 88-91 kind of guy, deceptive, strikes out quite a bit of people. But now he's like 91-94, tops out 96. So it's a obvious development on that regard. And he's got pretty good ride, solid running action. The deception is what helps that thing play up from the velocity. I've got it as a above average pitch because he can play that thing up in the zone and no one is going to touch it. I really do like that pitch a lot. The slider is pretty good too. He can backfoot it pretty well. It's got some decent spin to it. It's about 2,500. I like that pitch. It's a good fastball slider combo. The changeup's pretty fringe average, but the command helps it play up, especially with that deception. So he's like that kind of Nestor Cortez kind of guy, if you want to go with comps there. Obviously, the timing mechanisms that Cortez uses is not something that you're going to see Sears use, because I watched like five starts of him when we did this report and didn't see him take like 15 seconds to throw a pitch. So, but yeah, I think he's going to be in the bullpen to start, maybe get like a spot start or two. doesn't really walk that many people. Like I said, good command, strikes out a bunch. So I really like that kind of, you know, cracking the opening roster from JP Sears. So, Jared, I do appreciate you for coming on to the podcast tonight. It was awesome having you on and talking about all this stuff. You have any final thoughts you want to include here?
No, I just appreciate you having me on. It was great to talk a little bit of Royals prospects and just prospects in general. So, yeah, appreciate it.
Absolutely. And, of course, you're free to come back on if you want to. Just feel free to reach out. I have no issue with putting you on here if you want to come back on.
Yeah, always happy to join.
Awesome. Go ahead and follow Jared at JaredCP1. Make sure to follow his other work for Prospects Live and Royals Farm Report. They'll have a podcast coming out here soon as well, so feel free to listen to those guys as well. From Tyler Jennings and for Trevor Hoof and Jared, this has been Field and Stream, part of the Prospects Live podcast network.